All right, this is the Happy House Hunters. This is our mastermind call, and we're all talking about flipping in the month of October. And of course, next month, it's all about filling, which happens to be my specialty. And boy, I tell you, I haven't had any calls or anything major with tenants for some time. And we're going to get down in, yes, Kyle, cross your fingers. And so we're going to get kind of, as I say, down in the weeds next month, all about filling and kinds of issues that one can have with filling your units. And, but today it's all about flipping. So I'm going to share my screen, and I'm not going to get, into depth too much with this article. This is from Bigger Pockets, and it talks about how to flip a house and make a profit. And the first thing he talks about is a puzzle. And, you know, when you open up the box and you have 1,000 little tiny pieces, you know, and you're like, ah, this is going to be so complicated. But it's helpful if you can see the big picture. And he uses that as an analogy with flipping. You kind of have to see the big picture. So these are the steps that he indicates if you're going to flip. Number one is you have to commit to the flip. It's easy to get excited about it, but boy, when you get down in the weeds, it can get very complicated very fast. So you have to be committed to get on with it. And then you have to educate yourself. And so here is the first book. Tammy, do you guys have this one? The book on flipping houses written by Jay Scott. It says, if you're planning on flipping houses and you haven't read this book through at least once carefully and taken notes, you're not doing enough. If you've already read it, go back and read it again. So this is the book. This is the handbook. And so I have that one, and I have read it twice, and I do refer to it as I go through flipping. And he says, next, start to teach your spouse, your kids, your mom, your dad, your dog, your cat, your hamster, what you've learned, because it's a great way to internalize the knowledge. And I've discovered that that is true. So share what you've learned. And then learn the math. Here is the flipping calculator. So if you go to this article in Bigger Pockets, you can click through and it'll take you right to the flipping calculator and play around with those numbers. Definitely make sure you have room in the deal. That's the biggest thing on flipping, is to make sure there's room in the deal. Now, I see a lot of, you know, formulas, and they're just kind of in general, because every deal has a different set of numbers depending on what needs to be done to the house. And the more you do it, the better you get at figuring out the numbers. But they talk about, you know, never buying a house more than 70% of the ARV. I like 50% of the ARV. If the ARV is 100,000, I don't want to pay more than 50,000 for that house, because there are always surprises along the way. And some of those surprises can be costly. And one of the big ones, and I think Tammy will nod on this one, is those darn underground sewer drains keep haunting us. And that's what's haunting Adrian right now on his property, is the darn underground sewer drains. And those can be very costly. So I don't like to pay more than 50% of the ARV. And so do the numbers by hand too. Make sure that you understand it. And again, there's some links here to go back to Bigger Pockets to use some of their analysis tools. Do your market research. You know, how much are the average homes selling for? How much are the bank REOs selling for? How fast are properties selling? What areas seem to be selling the fastest? What property types, sizes, layouts seem to be selling the fastest? And once you do your market research, that's where you find your partners. And they're going to talk about having a realtor in there, Kyle. So I cannot stress that enough. The realtor is going to be one of your biggest partners. You can't flip the house alone. You have to, number one, arrange for your financing. And I kind of like to do this first. If you have cash, you can, you know, simply do a cash deal, write a check. That's easiest, but it's not possible for a lot of folks. But then you can do conventional financing. You can do home equity loans. You can do hard money loans. There's all kinds. You can do private money. There's all kinds of ways to finance it. So you have a lot of different options, but you need to pick one in order to move on if you're going to start flipping. And find a real estate agent. And his name is Kyle. And at this point, you understand what makes a good deal and have your financing lined up. And now you're ready to go, but you don't have to do it all by yourself. There's one team member you definitely need to find, and that is a real estate agent. Why? Because they're free. Yep. Your seller pays the agent. So why not use one? Yep. Your agent can open doors, write offers, find comparable sales so that you know what properties are really worth, and so much more. I always have a tendency to not calculate what's really going on in the market. I get stuck in the past on what was going on in the market. And so Kyle has to remind me what is going on in the market right now is not what I sometimes have in my brain on how the market is going. And so it is so important to have that person that's on the front line that knows the real numbers all the time. So one caveat here is if you plan to use direct mail to find your first flip, like sending letters out or whatever, and hoping that some of those will turn into deals, it says you don't want an agent. The same applies if you're looking to buy homes on for sale by owner. Real estate agents are perfect if you plan to buy homes off the multiple listing service, the MLS. Now, is that true, Kyle, or should we also look to you if we find one for sale by owner?
And you, for you guys, you know, who work with me, of course, I'm always down to consult with you, make sure you've got your T's crossed and your I's dotted. If it's someone who's done a few purchases, a few sales and transactions before, of course, you might feel more comfortable going it alone. But if you're a newbie, even if you're going after a FSBO or some kind of direct marketing, I would still have an agent, maybe double checking your work, because you don't want to get caught up. You know, these are legally binding contracts. You know, you want to make sure that you understand what you're wading into.
I get it. So thank you for that. Okay, you heard that right here. You got Kyle in your back pocket. So then you need to find the best deal for you. And the best deal may not be the best deal for you. It has to be the best deal for you. I'm price driven. And so sometimes the deals, it's a really great deal, but it's out of my price point. So I have to always look for the best deal for me. And so before you start seriously searching, it's good to think critically about what makes a deal right for you personally. And define your prospective deal. Define it out. What is the most you'll pay? And again, I'm price driven. So find what the most is you'll pay, what's the least you'll pay, what is the minimum or the maximum number of bedrooms that you want, depending on your market. And that's, of course, where Kyle comes in. That's where he always has to bring me up to speed on what's really going on in the marketplace. And so that's enough criteria to start filtering the properties on the market. And however, sometimes a two-bedroom home could become a three-bedroom, or a one-bath could become a two-bath. And so I keep my criteria kind of broad. And so once you've made some decisions, let your agent know. They can set you up with automatic emails, and then analyze the potential deals once they come in. And that's an important step. Don't skip it. It's time to start doing some deal analysis on real properties. So that's when you start working the numbers. And we all have done that. Bigger Pockets has a flipping calculator. Is this the one you use all the time, Tammy? The flipping calculator? No?
We use the rental property calculator because we're not really interested in flipping.
Okay. So you do more for the rehab and the rentals and that sort of thing. Okay. But there's tons of calculators on Bigger Pockets. So jump over there and work those numbers and then start driving for dollars. In addition to looking on the MLS, it's not a bad idea to either get in your car and start driving around hunting for those potential deals. Mark and I have done several this way. In the real estate investing industry, we often call this driving for dollars. So look for properties that are vacant or need some serious cosmetic help. And then if you can find the owners through public records, you'll often find them very willing to sell for a great deal. And then find the perfect house. After walking through and analyzing dozens and talking to your agent, you'll know right away if it's the right deal. If you're out there doing this on a regular basis and looking, you know when something's a good deal. You know when the price is right. But don't let emotion take over the deal. You get excited, I get that, but don't get emotionally connected to the deal. And then start your deal right away. So you want to make an offer and how much the buyer wants to pay, what financing the buyer will use, when the deal will close, who pays the closing cost, and all the important contingencies. And again, this is where your real estate agent or Kyle comes into play. And then deal with all those contingencies. It's the parts of the legal offer that are the escape clauses. In other words, these are things that let you walk away from the deal without losing your earnest money. You might have a contingency that says this offer is contingent upon my cat fitting through the cat door, though I wouldn't recommend it. Too many contingencies make a seller reluctant to accept your offer. Now, when the market was really hot, Mark and I, we bought several with zero contingencies because we knew that it would throw the deal out. There was just too many investors in competition for the same property. And so we were like, hey, whatever it looks like inside, we can fix it. We'll take it the way it is. And so what should you include? Well, depends on if you're going to do a cash deal or whether you're going to get mortgage, get financing. If you're going to get financing, then the appraisal could be a contingency. There could be an inspection contingency, depending on if you're getting a loan. There could be clear down to just the financing contingency altogether, whether you have to get the loan in order to get the price. But keep in mind that the fewer contingencies you have, the better chance the offer will be accepted. And then you can negotiate. So after you submit your offer, it's time to wait. Usually the seller will send a counter offer explaining what they want. You can negotiate that back and forth. And then at some point, you're going to either get into an agreement or you can't come to an agreement and you're going to go your separate ways. Then you're going to send the earnest money to make that a binding offer, a binding contract. And then from there is to pick a title or escrow company or attorney and get yourself to the closing table. Now, you've just gotten started. You've went through all of that and you haven't even started to flip yet. Now you own the property. Now is when you get in there and find out, what did I buy? How bad is it? And so now is when you might bring in your crew to do deeper inspections, finding out the condition. What is it that really has to be fixed? And like Adrian, for example, with his, sometimes if it's a foreclosure and you've purchased, because there were so many foreclosures on the market there for a while, that if you've purchased one, sometimes the utilities have been off and you don't even know what the issues are until someone moves into the property. And that's when you find out what the real issues are. And so we try to create that scope of work to begin with. The things that are totally visible, you know, it needs a new roof, it might need a new furnace, it might need, paint and carpet and maybe cabinets either painted or replaced and flooring and all of that. And once that's done and we find the contractors that we use on a regular basis, and once we get all of that done, if you're ready to flip, at that point, you can put it back out on the market. But if you're a buy and hold investor, then sometimes once it's rented, you find you have a whole other series of issues that you didn't even know about, like those underground sewer drains that are clogged that you don't know about till somebody lives there. So, but anyway, as you're working with contractors, be sure and get all of the bids in writing and with details. And at that point, you know, they'll put together a scope of work so that you and they are on the same page. And of course, having contractors has always been the biggest problem with doing the flips. It's helpful if you have some of those skills in your back pocket that you can also do. I know David has some skills, Mark has some skills. So, you know, if it's something that they can fix, sometimes it's a lot less expensive and faster for them to just do it than it is to find a contractor to do it. But it's really tough trying to estimate what all of those rehab costs are going to be. So again, here in Bigger Pockets, there's a book on estimating rehab cost. And then there's the book on flipping houses by Jay Scott we mentioned earlier. But then finish your due diligence, make sure the utilities have been paid, there's no outstanding debts, sign various disclosure documents from the title and escrow, open up a property-specific checking account and order some checks. Purchase hazard insurance and if needed, flood insurance, and then get your contractor scheduled. And so from there, you're ready to close on the property and manage that rehab. But don't forget, you have to manage all of the financials while you're going. And it says, go overboard on the organization. It says there may be hundreds of receipts, bids, and documents floating around, but take a few moments every single day to organize them and enter them into a spreadsheet so you can keep track of your spending. I like to just have a separate account for each property, and that way that bank account becomes my spreadsheet, and I can keep all of my spending organized that way. And then make your final punch list once all the contractors finish. Create a punch list of all the things that they forgot. And I do that on my buy and holds as well. So no matter how good the contractor is, they're going to miss some small details, and it's your job to go in and create that punch list. Then at that point on a flip, you're ready to put it back on the market and collect your profit. And again, bigger pockets suggest that you consider staging the property. It does make a difference. I don't remember what the statistics are. Kyle, do you know what the statistics are on how quickly or how much more a property sells for if it's staged versus if it's not staged?
I don't know those statistics off the top of my head. I do know it really does make a pretty significant effect, because unfortunately, a lot of people lack imagination. And staging is one of those things, it can get costly. I like doing my own staging when I go out to like garage sales and estate sales. I pick up things here and there and try to keep it in storage. So that's something, you know, a lot of people could probably get into even doing them themselves too. I don't know.
Okay, so if they're doing a lot of flipping, it would be beneficial to maybe have some of your own staging pieces.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if you're using it for a business, then of course get receipts. That's a tax write-off. Mm-hmm. That's a business deduction.
That's a good point. I like that. But yes, the statistics are there. I haven't looked them up for today's presentation, but the statistics are there that the properties will sell for more and they'll sell faster if it's staged. And again, you can hire professional staging companies. Or again, if you have a tight budget, you can kind of do some of your own staging. I do a little bit, even on my rentals, on my buy and holds. But once you're ready, then list the home on the MLS. And again, that's where Kyle comes in. You'll sign an agreement with your real estate agent that spells out things like the sale price, the commission, how long the listing agreement will last. And then the agent will look at comparable properties in the neighborhood, and they'll come up with what your price point should be. And then have your agent keep tabs on the property while the home is on the market. There aren't a ton of things you can personally do besides maintaining the home and answering questions when they come up. However, your agent can do quite a bit. They can do weekly reports. They can let you know the progress on, let's let Adrian in. You can look at the progress at least once a week and make sure that your property is getting viewed. It's getting out there. And then if you get an offer, it says, don't celebrate yet. It says you can break out the champagne, but keep the cork closed. 50% of offers don't turn into sales. 50%. Kyle, do you agree with that? 50%?
I mean, that's not been so true lately, but I think in a more stable market, it is up there with the divorce rate. Yeah.
Wow. So review the offer with a magnifying glass and talk about it with your spouse, your agent, your investing partner, your real estate agent. Make sure that you're negotiating a fair price, because again, you've just taken a lot of time and effort to flip this property, and then allow for a due diligence period. Just as you did your due diligence, now your buyer will have to do their due diligence. They'll probably hire a professional inspector, and they're going to find all those problems that you thought you had fixed. So be prepared to even have to come back at that point and tidy up some things in the process. Yes, Kyle.
Actually, something right there. There are some inspection companies, after you've done your flip, if you want to be able to head off those problems ahead of time and keep more negotiating power, because sometimes if they find problems, they want to come back and try to knock you down on price. There are some inspection companies, you can have them come out and do a pre-listing inspection. They'll point out all the things that are wrong, give you time to fix them, and they'll come back and update their inspection report.
Good to know. Yeah. So that will definitely head off some of those issues then once you have an offer. Because now, depending on who's buying the property, they might be locked into a rate. And so they might be under a time commitment to get to the closing table to keep their rate, especially with rates going up these days. So that's good. That's a good point. Now you're ready to close on the sale, pay the taxes, and move on. On the day of the closing or several days before, you'll sit down at a big table, sign the closing documents. Of course, these days, oftentimes that's done electronically. Inspect the paperwork carefully for mistakes. If you find any errors, immediately address them with the closing agent. And then the title company will handle all the payments except for the incoming funds from the buyer and paying off the loans that you have on the property. They'll give you a cashier's check or a bank wire for the difference. Now, the funds are not all yours to keep. Instead, any profit needs to be shared with the government when tax time comes. So house flipping is generally considered active income, therefore taxed at the highest levels. However, good tax planning can help avoid a good portion of the taxes due. So be sure to seek out a qualified tax professional before selling your flip. Finally, take your profit and sink it into the next flip, or use it as a cash infusion to buy rental properties or real estate notes. House flipping can be a lot of fun, but it is active income. So continue to build up your passive income at the same time to create real wealth. And the passive income is your buy and holds. So there you have it. And again, the book on flipping houses by Jay Scott. So be sure and check that out. Now, Kyle brought up a good point about you can flip things other than houses just to add cash into your budget. And I'm going to stop sharing my screen for just a moment. I want to say hello to Adrian. We still have Tammy and Kyle, Elise and Adrian. So Adrian, welcome. I saw that you jumped in there in the middle of that. So now I'm going to share again, and we are going to look at 36 items that people want to buy. So there's no reason to try to flip something if you don't have any buyers. And again, with house flipping, there's always a market out there for buyers. What is the inventory right now, Kyle, for houses on the market?
It's still about the same. It hasn't changed much. We've got about 4 to 5 weeks. In September, there was quite a few canceled contracts that did so. Things that had gone into contract came back on the market. So that gave us a little bump up. It's like we were talking about earlier, the, 50% of all the offers, don't make it through. There was a weird increase in canceled contracts last month, but inventory is still critically low, 4 or 5 weeks, give or take.
Wow. So the point is that you definitely have buyers to buy those houses that you're rehabbing and putting back out on the market. But when you're going to flip something other than real estate, make sure that it's items that people want to buy. You know, it might be your hobby. It might be your favorite thing. But if nobody wants to buy it, you're going to end up with quite the collection. So make sure it's stuff that people want. So here are some ideas, the best things to flip. Number one is furniture. Now, again, if you're in the real estate market, this is probably a good one for you, because if you like having rentals, especially if you're in the short-term space or in the midterm space, you're looking at furniture anyway. And as you're updating your furniture, you might have some furniture that you want to flip out of there. If you're a stager where you're staging real estate, you want to update. So furniture is great, especially wood furniture or outdoor furniture is one of the best things that you can flip for a bit of extra cash. So if you have any kind of an area, a garage area, a storage unit even, you can actually flip some furniture. And I don't know about you, but if you've looked on Marketplace these days, oh my gosh, there's furniture everywhere. And some of it, they're even giving away. They just want it gone. And you can actually clean it up. And with all of the painting out there now, you can really modernize some of those pieces by just painting them and putting some new pulls on like dressers and that sort of thing and reselling them. And my girlfriend does it out of her garage, and she goes and buys dressers. That's her thing. And she paints these dressers on all of the colors that people like, the grays and the sage and some different shades of blues. And then she puts all new pulls on these dressers, and folks are buying them, and they're using them in their dining rooms as buffets. They're using them in their bedrooms as dressers. They're using them in their offices, as credenzas behind their desks. And she might get stuff for free or pay, $25 or $35 for an old dresser. And by the time she finishes it, she's selling them sometimes for $250 or $300. And all she did was put paint and poles on it. And so she's making a nice little income off of it. And she loves doing it. And then, of course, patio furniture is the same, because with patio furniture, oftentimes it just needs a coat of paint and some new cushions. And you can sell it for $200 or $300 more than what you paid for it. So there's a good turn in furniture. There's also vintage Tupperware. Now, I'm not a Tupperware person, so I wouldn't think that this would be something that would be on my list to buy, but you can make money selling vintage Tupperware. So just make sure they're in good shape. Now, scrap metal, that's a good one. And there's money in it, but you have to have a lot of it. You have to have a lot of scrap metal to make money. And so you see guys with their pickup trucks just gathering up scrap metal. And now, if you've got buy and holds and you've replaced furnaces, guess what? You've got an old furnace that doesn't work that is worth some money as scrap metal. And so if you're thinking I have to pay somebody to haul this old furnace out, maybe you could actually scrap it and make some money on it instead. And so just know that there's some money in scrap metal. Now, used books. Yeah, well, at my household, if I have any used books, they don't get sold because I collect books. So this is one of the, I would be the buyer instead of the seller on this one. And so especially paperbacks, they don't bring in a lot of money. However, if you have a collection, then you can actually make some money on books. Now, commercial equipment can be easily flipped, from riding lawnmowers to pizza ovens. Okay. So depends on what you're into, but this is something where you can generate quite a bit of cash flow. VCRs and VHS tapes. Again, I don't have any of those left around anymore, but it's a great place to start. So if you're a newbie to flipping, that's a good place to start. I don't know where all the buyers would be though. Strollers for young couples, you can anything baby stuff sells, because if you have a new mom that doesn't have anything, yeah, that's quite a market for any kind of baby stuff. Collectible jewelry, it's an excellent item to flip for profit, especially if you have a discerning eye. And again, I'm not a big jewelry person, so this one's kind of lost on me as well. Vintage clothing, there are entire stores filled with vintage clothing. And so you won't make that much money by selling, but the exception to this is the rare stuff. And so the best things to flip include sports jerseys, designer items, high quality shoes, clothing with price tags still attached, band t-shirts during specific tours, and anything rare or vintage. And then there's, of course, the old video games. There is a huge marketplace to buy and sell old video games. And records and record players, there's, again, complete stores that are committed to just buying. And of course, that's what they're selling. And so they're always looking to buy. And so head to one of those stores near you if you've got some of that to sell. So designer eyeglass frames, again, who knew? They're some of the best items to flip for profit because they're relatively easy to come by on websites like eBay, and they don't take a lot of storage space. Bicycles, Mark got into bicycles for a while. He's doing airplanes currently, but all kinds of bikes, including dirt bikes, are great things to consider for flipping, especially if you can, you know, tinker around with them and clean them up and paint them up a little bit. And then limited edition sneakers and name brand shoes, appliances. Now, again, there's appliance stores everywhere, and they depend on people selling them appliances because they buy so that they can then clean them up, restore them, and put them out in their store. So there's a huge market for used appliances. And I don't know about you, but in my buy and holds, I've sometimes bought used appliances because the new ones weren't readily available, and I can buy a used one for a lot less and put it into a rental. Now, websites, believe it or not, you don't have to stick to physical items in order to make a profit. You can buy and sell websites. Website flipping is a huge market, and you can go through platforms like Flippa to buy websites and resell them for a nice profit. And speaking of websites, well, they're going to get into baby and child items, but other than websites, it's also domain names. You can buy and sell domain names as well. So baby and child items, we talked about that already. That's always in high demand. Smartphones and computers, again, with the cost of the items new, those are definitely in high demand. Vehicles, if you have some skill set in fixing cars, flipping cars is a great side hustle. Vintage electronics, just vacant land. Vacant land is one of the best things to flip for a profit, especially if you know what to look for, because sometimes you can get those very, you know, different lots or whatever, very inexpensive. If you keep an eye on the area and know that it's up and coming, vacant land is a good way to make some income. Vintage picture frames. Again, I'm not too much into that as well, although we wanted to decorate our house in a whole 1920s theme, and we were looking for those oval picture frames, and we had a hard time finding them, and we looked everywhere in all the vintage stores looking for those. There's stocks and options. Now, you're not going to find stocks for sale at a yard sale. They are some of the best things to flip, but you, in order for you to make money and not lose your shirt, you do need to know what you're doing. So you'd have to meet with maybe a financial planner or really get to know stocks and options before you got into that. Power tools, that's a good one. Lego sets, believe it or not, board games, and sporting equipment, sports memorabilia, and musical instruments. I don't know, but when the kids are at the age, I think it's fifth grade, when they start them on music programs in school, and a lot of times those parents can't afford brand new instruments, but they will purchase something used that's in good shape. Fitness equipment's the same thing. You know, the doctor says that you need to lose weight, and next thing you know, you're thinking, well, I probably ought to have a treadmill. And then when you look at the prices of the new ones, they're just outrageous. And so folks start looking on Marketplace. Facebook Marketplace is kind of a gold mine of all that stuff. Vintage mason jars. Boy, I tell you, I was the wedding queen for a while. I worked in the hotel industry, in food and beverage, in banquets, and all of these brides wanted to do the whole vintage mason jar theme for their wedding. And so they were buying mason jars, vintage mason jars by the dozens. Vintage rugs, vintage globes, car parts, if you know anything about cars, antique arcade games, power washing equipment. That's a new one for me. And so now that you know some of the best things to flip for profit, it's time to get started. And how do you find those things? The easiest and most obvious is right inside your house. Take a look around, see what you have that you want to get rid of. But after that, you can find them at yard sales, thrift stores, Facebook Marketplace, that's the hot spot, eBay, other online marketplaces, flea markets, estate sales, Facebook groups, resale apps, Craigslist. So there's all kinds of places where you can find this stuff. And so what are the easiest? Again, really, it's just whatever you have, but furniture seems to be one of the easiest ones and the most profitable. And so it just goes through all the different ways that you can make extra money and add to your bank account. And of course, if you're like me, the whole point of adding that extra money to my bank account is so that I can buy more real estate, because buy and holds become the passive income for me. And so if I could, I mean, just think, if you could put $1,000 a month into a savings account somewhere, that's $12,000 a year. And what would you do if you had an extra $12,000? That would be enough to get started on another property. That would be enough. You could get started. Am I right, Kyle? If somebody had $12,000 in cash? Yeah. So in a year's time, see, you could position yourself to buy another buy and hold. Anyway, questions, comments, thoughts. So not only are we flipping properties, but you can flip other things to make money for your, for me, it'd be for my real estate habit, I like to call it. So Kyle, what are your thoughts? You brought up the conversation originally about flipping things other than real estate.
Well, I mean, of course, I love the idea. Right now, I'm really obsessed with this TV show called Chateau DIY. These people are buying these old castles and fixing them up as bed and breakfasts. And the people who are coming to stay, they fall in love with the artwork. They fall in love with the end tables and the lamps. And so the people have come up with the idea. They're going around to estate sales and yard sales around the country in France. And they're putting everything that's in their B&B has a little price tag on it too. You can buy this and take this home and have it shipped off to home. So yeah, it's a really great idea to find knickknacks and treasures and upcycle them. It's all about upcycling. You know, you paint it, you clean it up, you stage it somewhere nice and it looks fabulous, and you can sell it for, you know, way more than you paid for it.
Wow. See, now I have an idea, because folks all the time are complimenting our 1920s bed and breakfast in Cannot Winchester on my furnishings in my parlor, because every time I find something that's 1920s, I grab it. So never thought about reselling it for twice the price and rebuying
it. Put a price tag on it.
Yeah, you
have the excitement. You're always out shopping, finding new things, and you get to bring them home and treasure them and enjoy them for a little while. And then you sell them and let them move on.
I love that. Yes, I'm going to have to kind of sit with that a minute and see how that resonates. Yes, I like that idea. Tammy, how about you?
We are not flipping anything other than our own money.
Okay.
I don't like shopping, so I don't want to shop for other things and try to sell them.
But Tammy, you're an artist. You could be selling your original works of art.
I have done that. I had an Etsy store for a while, but I wasn't really selling much, so I just closed it down.
But you are flipping your money. So that is a way that you're flipping something other than real estate, is that you are being a private lender and making an interest off of the money that you're lending, and you get your money back to do it again.
Right.
So what better way to flip when you get everything back and you get to do the same money over and over and over? I love that. Yep, that's a perfect way to add more money into the bank account for your real estate, as I like to say, for my real estate. I have a real estate problem. I'm addicted. So I have to feed my addiction of real estate. Elise, how about you? What are your thoughts?
It's super interesting that, you know, you can flip so many different things and how that can be associated to even, you know, short-term rentals, and seeing that somewhere now you have a couple other streams of income. I think that's super interesting. And I know I'm not in the place to start flipping yet, but I totally would be interested in seeing how that would work and just exploring that option. So great information. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love it. Adrian, how about you? Welcome. It's good to see you on the call today.
Good to see you too.
Yes. So what are your thoughts? Anything there that taps your toe that you'd be interested in that you could infuse some funds into your bank account?
I've done the flipping of things like that. I've gone to police stores and stuff like that, but I never get the money that I'm pleased with. So I haven't done as much as I used to, but I dabble once in a while though.
Okay. And Mark's doing airplane parts all the time. You know, he's always buying airplane parts. And then if he finds a good deal on an airplane, he'll fix it up and then resell it. So now when it comes to flipping houses, and I want to go back and say this, I've coined my own phrase. It can be a long flip. You know, I've bought a property. I've held it as a buy and hold for 2 or 3 years. And then when I looked at my spreadsheet, because I, you know, let's say that the market is hot and you're thinking, oh, there's some great deals out there and I would love to get in the market again and buy something again. And then you realize, well, I'm out of cash. Let's look at my spreadsheet. What is the property that's performing the worst out of all of the properties that I own? And maybe it's time to put that one back out on the market again. And what it does is it puts you back in the game of maybe buying something even better. And so that can be a long flip. It doesn't have to be something that I bought just with the intent to flip. It can be something that I bought with the intent to buy and hold, but maybe it didn't actually perform as well as I thought it was going to. And the actual numbers then just didn't meet my mark. And so now it's ready for me to put it back out on the market. And I've done that with several. Where I've purchased them and just, I knew that they were going to be, you know, great buy and holds. And for whatever reason, I put it back out on the market and it infused that cash, see, back into my bank account so that then I could go purchase something different. And you get better. You get better at working the numbers. You get a better instinct at which properties are going to be the best to flip and be the best to buy and hold. And then you get better even with your rehab cost. Does everyone agree with me that the more you do it, the better you can calculate what your rehab costs are actually going to be? Because experience is the best teacher. And so the more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah, that's actually really great. And a lot of professional developers do the same thing. My friend, he bought a house over in Old Oaks like 5 or 6 years ago when they first started turning that neighborhood. And the guy who bought his house, he flipped it, sold. Randy bought the first house on the block. And the guy literally went down the street and bought every house one at a time and flipped them and made more money. And he improved the entire neighborhood. So as he flipped each house became worth more and more money. Like he single-handedly turned that street.
I love it. I love that. And again, you have to have cash to do the first deal. Then you can start leveraging after that. It's the first deal is the hardest one. And once you get the first one under your belt, then you can start leveraging that equity. So I love that. Any other comments, thoughts? Yeah, Tammy says, nope, we're not flippers. We're buy and holders. I'm mostly buy and hold too. I get it. But there are folks that want to do the flipping. Flipping to me is a full-time job because you're always working. You have to manage your team, your crew. You're always looking to, you know, for the next best deal. Then you're always, you know, working at the other end once it's rehabbed to get it back out on the market and get the most out of it so that you can then do it again. So it's a constant job and it doesn't become very passive. And so, of course, I'm more about the passive income. So I flip just enough, you know, to infuse my bank account with the cash that I need to buy more buy and holds. But flipping is big business. It's big business out there. Any questions from anyone? We have a quiet group today. Again, I think most of us are buy and holds. I don't think we're that much into flipping in the mastermind, but. But it is the topic.
You convinced me.
What, to be buy and hold?
Yeah. My first goal when I started this journey, I always wanted to flip, but you convinced me to do them buy and hold. So
well, you know, the best option. And again, there's nothing wrong with making it a long flip. If you have a property that's not functioning the way you want it to, oftentimes you can either pull some equity out of it and buy an additional property, or you can flip that one and infuse your bank account with money again to buy another buy and hold. So you just have to definitely work the numbers. And that's where those links in that article are so important. Back to the Bigger Pockets. Bigger Pockets has tons of great calculators. So use the tools that are available to you. And Bigger Pockets makes all of those tools available. And I know I use them all the time. Tammy and David use them all the time. Kyle can work numbers for you as well, but use the tools that you have available. All right. Well, I think we've had a great conversation today about flipping. Any final comments from anyone?
No, I think all the information was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on today. Kyle, any last comments before we go? Give yourself a little plug there.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, of course, if anybody has, you know, any interest in getting into some more properties, or if you're not sure, you know, how much equity your property might have, because the market has gone up so steep so fast over the last few years. I think they said something like 67% of Americans now are sitting on like a good chunk of equity for like the first time in history. So tap into that, use it, leverage it, snowball it. Like Kathy said, you've already done the hard part. You've got the first property under your belt, you can start to snowball that into some more.
Yep, I love that. All right, folks, thank you so much for being on today. I'll put this, I'll upload it into the mastermind section of the Happy House Hunters. If you want to find that article with those links, I'll upload that as well. So we'll see everyone next time.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.